Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. Episode 9, Continuous Improvement and the Law.
Legal or immigration has always kind of been on the edge of lean. So I think it's somewhat appropriate, right? The topic of lean in legal.
If you made a list of organizations who are unlikely to implement lean practices, you might put law firms pretty high on that list. But Barry Appleman Leiden, BEAL, a top corporate immigration law firm, would not be on that list because they are a law firm that is lean at heart, priding themselves and acknowledged by their clients for the effectiveness and their efficiency. My guest today is Jacqueline Harder, who is a certified lean agent and operational excellence leader at BAL. Jacqueline leads BAL's lean transformation. She leads training and she works with teams at all levels across the organization to pursue the exceptional. Jacqueline is also a lean gardener. We'll hear about that too. Jacqueline Harder, welcome to the Edges of Lean.
Thank you, Bella. It's so nice to be here.
Jacqueline, you work with lawyers, right?
Yes, I do. Yes.
So that is, you know, and that's why you're here today, because I think that a lot of us wouldn't think that lean or continuous improvement is something that would be really appreciated in a law practice. And so I'm really excited to hear about how does that work and how are people responding to it? But before that, I would love for you to just tell us a little bit about Jacqueline and how did you even get involved in this in the first place?
Well, thank you so much, Bella. Yes, I do agree that lean in legal is somewhat new. There are a couple of firms that are doing it. But Barry Appleman and Leiden, BAL, which is the firm that I work with, we're really trying to innovate and applying Lean, Six Sigma, creating metrics that were never, you know, in place before, et cetera. And so I think that's one of the wonderful things that we'll talk about is how we ourselves are on the edge of the edge. I've been in legal for my entire career. So my first job was as a receptionist at a two-lawyer law firm. And it was actually two lawyers who split an office. And I was the receptionist for East. So I had two phones that I would monitor. Depending on which phone that rang, I would either say, thank you for calling this place, or I would say, thank you for calling that place. And that grew into, these were newly licensed attorneys. So they really didn't have things like file organization protocols or any kind of interviewing protocols or even like stored or shared drives, things like that where we could keep templates. Because my first stint, you know, about 6 years in legal was doing pleading based work. So civil, criminal, I've been to probate court. I've sat in many courtrooms. I've talked to many court clerks. I've actually trained, you know, newly graduated attorneys on how to approach court clerks when getting orders entered. And so, you know, out of all of that experience and creating those offices and, or, you know, creating that office kind of foundation, that structure, the billing, all of the things that, you know, you wouldn't really necessarily think of when you say, I'm going to start a law firm, right? They didn't really think about these things. And so I didn't know it at the time, of course, right? I had no idea that creating something with the taxonomy or some sort of methodology, like a file numbering system or something like that. I didn't really realize that I was kind of organizing my way, on the edge of lean, let's say, not to overuse that phrase, but I mean, I really was applying a lot of lean fundamentals and didn't really know it.
So you were creating standard work for them.
Yes, exactly. And I was able to create you know, and not automate, so to speak, but I was able to create, let's say, interview sheets or things that would allow me to get my work done faster, you know, get to the bottom of something, because we would get a lot of cold calls, right? You know, I'd like a free consultation. And so I would need to screen the person to even see if they were, they should speak to the attorney. And so I ended up saving the attorneys a bunch of time. And then once they were ramped up on how to do that, and, you know, we were able to pass that along to another person that we hired, then I was able to get a lot more done myself, because I had things that I could reference, and I had things and tricks, and, you know, knew when we needed to get rid of certain things, like, you know, aging chairs in the office. So it really, really boiled down to a lot of things that I found fascinating. It was my favorite job. I was young, you know, I was 18, fresh out of high school. I was in college at the time as well. So it was a really, really great experience. And then I went into immigration. And when I worked in immigration, that was a completely different world, right? So you go from pleadings-based work to forms, and it's all filling out forms. And so I did that for about...
When you say immigration, immigration law. Working.
Immigration law, correct. I'm sorry. So the Barry Altman and Leiden and the other firms that I worked at since I've been working in immigration law deals with corporate immigration. So thank you. I often just think that everyone knows what I'm talking about, but thank you. So yeah, so I got in immigration law as a paralegal, and worked for about 6 years with a local solo practitioner. And this was one of the most meticulous women I had ever worked with. I mean, a person, I shouldn't even say woman, you know, her templates, her system, everything was, while manual, very consistent, right? And so you might say, oh, this is really antiquated. We write, you know, these LCA numbers down on a piece of paper rather than putting them in a spreadsheet. And honestly, I don't know which would have taken a longer time, because Excel, you know, not everybody was as proficient as Excel as they seem to be these days when they're walking into the, you know, to a new job. But her processes were amazing, and our volume was amazing for the number of staff that we had. And so I was always really intrigued by that, but really was just trying to learn more about immigration. And then lo and behold, I get called, after sending out a resume, of course, to move to Atlanta and join a law firm called Paul Hastings at the time to work with in their business immigration team. And so I got to work with legal teams and got to put on my corporate hat. I got to learn all the new the TLAs, the three-letter acronyms, and all the things that come along with jumping into corporate. And it was amazing. I stopped filing petitions, which, you know, took me away from the work, but also brought me a whole slew of new knowledge, QBRs, ABRs, you know, ROI, just things that I never thought about.
That's a lot of TLAs.
Those are a lot of TLAs. And so after working with Paul Hastings, they ended up eliminating their immigration sector. And so we had merged with another law firm and then a subsequent law firm. And during the time with that subsequent law firm, there was an interest on behalf of one of the partners to begin lean training. So there was about a group of, I think, about 15 of us who underwent the entire, like, yellow belt, lean yellow belt training, I guess I would call it, as well as the Six Sigma green belt certification training. And so go ahead.
What do you think instigated that interest?
I think it was a desire to, you know, really remain competitive in the market, right? And really make sure that we were looking at things correctly and that we were aligning our processes in the right way. And I think that there was an honest desire, you know, to push towards that. The work and the, you know, as you know, there's a tremendous amount of needs when you say you're going to go lean. And so as those needs start to rack up, sometimes leadership can say, you know, it's not worth the investment. So it was a great, I'll say, 4 or 5 years. We worked with legal teams to try and break down their processes. And I created the firm's lean training, like the Lean 101. And, you know, there was a real desire to share that information, even with, you know, the financial teams and some of the more senior people within the firm. the directors and the senior managers and some of the you know, partners. And when they started to hear about the things that we need to do in order to look at our processes and be more efficient and have standard work and you know, understand what does it look like when we're doing something wrong, it was a real eye opener for them. But the work that we did over the, you know, the course of the next 4 years it was just amazing. I think I've trained over 1,000 people, just Lean 101, you know, done it remotely, done it across continents. You know, I've been up at 9-10 o'clock at night, training people in Australia, which has been fun. You know, I've gotten to meet a lot of people, my colleagues, you know, through that. And then when I joined BAL, I came to them saying, you know what, I have all these new skills, because I had worked at BAL previously. This was during another transitional time with that one firm that kept moving forward. And there were just a couple of mergers. And I came back and I said, you know, I know a lot of this new stuff, right? I have gotten my hands dirty and I have worked with teams and I have gotten a lot of good stuff out of what I've done. And I really want to help BAL pursue the exceptional, because that's exactly what we do, right? We pursue the exceptional. And we also enable exceptional people to come to our country and do amazing things. And so the partner there, Jeremy Fudge and Freda Garcia, they embraced it. They embraced the idea that this is the way that we need to go. And so for me, it was a huge opportunity. I became senior manager of operational excellence and I worked with the ops teams. I trained another 100 people. And then I started to build my eminence, because my manager is the first non-attorney I'd ever worked for. And he's brilliant. He's a mathematician. His mind is amazing and he empowers his talent. And it was amazing. I had never written articles before. And Bella, you know, we've worked together a little bit on similar things, you know, putting some of these things together, being on podcasts, putting articles together and, you know, forming these collaborations. It's been an amazing journey for me. And so from start to finish, or I guess to today, we're not finished.
Yeah.
But from start to finish, it's just been this whirlwind of activity, right? Because you're still trying to do legal. And then also now trying to, with this role, really trying to transform the firm into, you know, a lean and an operating organization that measures things and you know, gives people metrics to strive for and lets them know, like I said, when they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing and being really innovative. I mean, we do automation. We create a lot of automation that's outside of what other law firms are doing. So it's amazing. We're just, and I know I just sound like I'm just boasting about, but I've just never seen the kind of acceptance of change and realizing that if we don't change, we could very well become the Kodak of the 21st century, right?
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, we don't want to do. Legal is always dependent on the administration. I'm sorry, immigration law is always dependent on an administration. And there are certain costs that employers have to incur that, you know, may not always be around. So we always have to be thinking on our toes about how we can add value to everything that we do so that every one of our clients is super happy. And also to be able to say, you know what, we work lean. We want our people to work lean, and we're going to show you how we can make this lean for you as well, right? Because our jobs as lean practitioners is usually to remove frustration, and that frustration usually comes in the form of waste within our processes. So I'm doing my dream job right now. I've always had my dream job, I think, and then it got better. And now I kind of, you know, I'm running my own dream job, which I absolutely love. So sorry, I know that was a lot, but that's me in a nutshell.
that's fantastic. And I think it, you know, it really takes us into this, you know, doing lean in a law firm, which, you know, we said at the beginning is probably not the first thing that people think of when they think of, you know, where would I practice lean? And so the thing that immediately comes to my mind when you talk about the leadership and the appetite that your organization has for change is that that's not my expectation. My expectation would be at the point where you say to somebody, all right, this process of actually, you know, creating and producing these filings, right, that you do, well, you know, it's maybe it's a little bit like like a factory, and you know, we need to think about how do we actually run a more efficient factory. That a lawyer who went to law school to learn to be sort of clever would say, well, that's not what I came for, right? Do you ever see that kind of pushback?
Sometimes, but not so much at BAL, because we know that we are different and we have a lot of minds that are open to change. Now, of course, there's always, you know, in change management, there's always that risk, that fear that we won't know enough to keep up with the new thing or whatever. And I think that I encounter that. But a lot of the attorneys have been saying, let's just figure out what the base, you know, what works, right? What works really, really well, and let's do it the same way. And to get attorneys to agree to that is close to moving a mountain. And they've done an exceptional job with a lot of what they've done organizationally. Now what we need to do is just get down to brass tacks and build that house of lean, you know, get that avid group of problem solvers out there. All our people should be every day trying to figure out how to reduce their frustration, whereby creating value for our clients.
I love that when you say that it's about reducing frustration, because I think when you say to people, well, it's about reducing waste, a lot of people think, well, I'm not wasteful, you know, I don't think of myself as someone who is producing waste. But to say, you know, we're really about reducing frustration, I think that's brilliant. That's a great way to put it. So what's next then? You're talking about getting this avid group of problem solvers. How do you go about doing that?
So a lot of it is education, finding people who are interested in removing that frustration. I think that the frustration is basically an indication point, right? So when we look at lean, I think one of the things that we tell people a lot of times is look where the process slows down or stops. And it seems to me, and I'm not done statistics on this, but I would argue that it follows that if you were to look at what frustrates you, that's likely a place where you're slowing down or stopping. And it's frustrating for, you know, many, many reasons. And it can be frustrating to the client as well. And so when I think about how to present that, you're exactly right. People don't want to think that the work that they've been doing in the way that they've been doing has been wasteful. And so I'm very sensitive to that, knowing that what our people do is absolutely brilliant. And we hire the best and the brightest because we really need that in order to do excellent work. And so the focus on being better and doing better is there. So creating that army of avid problem solvers is really just showing them the tools. So let's talk about identifying the ways that we waste our time or we get frustrated. Because we get frustrated a lot waiting or waiting on the government, right? We can't predict anything the government does, right? Adjudications can take sometimes, you know, years, no lie. And so, you know, a lot of our clients get frustrated with the timeframes and things like that. And so we understand that. And that, I think that frustration creates for me, it lights my fire because I want to help that person. One of the first things I usually ask someone when I, you know, speak to them about lean is when was the last time you were able to take a vacation and completely disconnect from work? And they'll usually tell me that they're not able to do that. And that makes me sad. And it makes me sad because, you know, it's a big world and we have one life to live. And I want to make sure that when someone makes an attempt to take a break, that they can actually take that break, enjoy their family, enjoy the time that they have away from work. And oftentimes that fear comes from what happens while I'm gone. Well, Bella, what do we know the answer to that question to be? Process mapping, right? If we know all the steps, we don't need to ask someone who's out on Puerto Vallarta enjoying a nice or, you know, well-earned vacation, of course, observing all of the COVID precautions if you can even travel there. But, you know, in my mind, that's a lovely vacation place. So that's usually one of the first questions I ask. And I find that when I talk to people about what my goal is, which is usually, I want to get you to a place where the next time I talk to you after we've done some work, I want you to say you've taken a vacation and you haven't had to worry. And I've had a couple of people tell me that, and it has made so much of a change just in terms of how I internalize my performance, because it's not just about the work. It's about the people. It's so much about the people, because without the people, nothing gets made, nothing gets written, nothing gets done. So if we don't, you know, if we don't love and care and grow our people, we might as well just be burning money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, I think every episode of this podcast comes around to that, you know, it really is, it's about the people and how you take care of people. And that's the center of lean. That's, you know, no matter where you're practicing it, right, or you know, in what field, or what your ultimate goal is, it is really about taking care of and developing people. So you kind of, yeah, I think you hit it, right? That's the thing. And that's not something I think, again, that I would think of a you know, as being something that is coming from a law firm. Now I have to understand, you know, my understanding of how law firms work is mostly from, you know, books like The Practice. Do you remember that book? Right. Which is, yes, you know, somebody trying to make a partner, and how, you know, how hard that is to do. So that's that in terms of what a law firm is a very different way of being a law firm, isn't it?
It is, because we don't do the type of, those are those prestigious, you know, litigation cases that you see, you know, landmark decision made. We've definitely been involved in some amazing litigation. Some of our professionals have testified in front of Congress to help our clients, et cetera. I mean, we're very, very involved, but it is a very different kind of immigration, because you go from centering your focus on an argument to really presenting a set of forms and supporting documents that would substantiate some sort of immigration relief, right? And so that's the really big difference. The competition, the mental competition that I think attorneys love to have, right? The debaters, you know, I think people told me my whole life that I was gonna eventually be a lawyer and that would be great, but you can't just poof turn into one.
Yeah.
But the idea of arguing, or to me, you know, discussing from different viewpoints or coming at it from different viewpoints, is not something that we do a whole lot of, because we pretty much know what the law is. A lot of what we talk about is how to do it. And so it's funny that we can create our own frustration, mm-hmm, right? By creating maybe workarounds that aren't thought through. Maybe we're not asking the right people who do the work how to fix things. I just wrote an article about how, you know, high level leaders have this impression that they have to know everything. And it's like, no, please don't. I don't want you to think that, because you're going to come up with, you know, respectfully, you're going to come up with some wrong answers. So let your low level and your frontline people make those decisions and make them work. But that's what I love about BAL. It gives us the ability to take that kind of mental, that law frame impression, or the law firm impression of attorneys clicking away at type, you know, at their keyboards, generating hundreds of pages of litigation, and then going into court and arguing. That's not our day-to-day at all. Our day-to-day is talking to foreign nationals who are terrified about what's going to happen the next day, whether their children can enroll in college because they're not at the place yet where they, you know, they have the paperwork or whatever it is that they need yet. And, you know, dealing with the not just the foreign nationals, but then their employers, right? The people that have these immigration programs, and they're trying to take care of more things than we even are thinking about, like mobility, like getting someone's, you know, possessions from one country to another. It's amazing. You know, there are things like, you didn't know that you needed to have your original passport with you when you went to pick your stuff up. So now you have to wait another month before you can have your clothing, which is amazing, right? That's an amazing possible fail. And that's like the absolute worst outcome. So that what we try to do is really just generate processes that are repetitive enough such that people can understand what's going to happen. They don't feel lost. They feel cared for. And they know that our immigration attorneys are very passionate about what they do, and that they absolutely love helping our folks, you know, get these really, we've got some amazing people, you know, coming into this country with some great talent, and they're helping us. And so I think we're just really we're happy to be a really big part of that.
So as we're recording, this is December 2020, and we have been dealing with COVID for at least 9 months, maybe, you know, There's probably actually more when you think about when we started to hear about and worry about it. And I know that's probably had a really big impact on your work and how you do it. So what have you been doing to deal with this, you know, this forward movement with your Lean program while you are being virtual?
Well, the wonderful thing about BAL was they said, do things however you think they need to be done. And so I thought, well, I don't need to move to Dallas, Texas to do a great job. So I need to figure out how to do Lean by working with people who are in different places all around the country, right? Because even before we had the issue with COVID, we had the issue with travel. So you couldn't always spend a week, you know, sitting around a table in another office because you, you know, didn't have time, didn't want to fly. So now it's a little bit easier. What I introduced to the firm was time studies. And I said, we need to be able to get certain metrics. I want certain metrics that I can rely on that we can pull on a on an interval, you know, and we can baseline and we can look, because we're going to need to be able to set up these systems so that when we make changes, we can quickly quantify them. And so I had to sit and think about it. And of course, there's a million different ways to do video conferencing. And I thought, well, why, you know, why couldn't they go into a meeting, like a meet now feature, right? I think Zoom has it, Teams has it, most of them have it. You just meet now and you're not meeting with anyone, but then you share your screen and you record it. And so I thought, well, let's try this out. And so we tried it out with about, I think, 10 people ranging from, you know, entry-level paralegal to senior associate. And they would send me their videos. And because we would look at once, you know, we'd have obviously the starting and the stopping point, right? So we would know what part of the process we were examining and what we were looking for. We would just say, just do the work that you do. We don't want you to like look anything up. Don't look up any guides. Just do the work as if, you know, you were doing it on a day-to-day basis. And that was so enlightening because it wasn't just about, oh, now I can see the process. It's also now I can see that a certain program may not be working as well as it should. Or I may see that there are some lags that I wouldn't expect to see in certain places, you know, like when creating a PDF, when modifying things, you know, maybe that relates to an issue we're having with the vendor. Is that something that we should look into? And as you see that repeatedly through the, you know, through the videos, you can say, oh my goodness, yes, this is definitely an issue, because if we multiply this times the number of petitions we file, we've got about a month's worth of time lost.
And so, with having that recording, then you have the opportunity, then you could look at it multiple times and you could notice different things. Where if like, if you you're at the gambo, you know, you're really at the gambo sitting watching somebody do it, you're only watching them do it once. And then, or maybe, you know, a couple of times, and there was, you know, they may be a little bit self-conscious about you sitting there and observing them. So that's really great. And then you can, yeah.
Yeah, I was very conscious of not wanting to seem to be sitting on people's shoulders, right, while they're doing their work, because that can be, it can just be intimidating for anyone. A seasoned professional might not want someone looking, I don't want anybody looking over my shoulder, but I have no problem sharing, you know, what I'm doing as part of my work. And so people were really willing to do it. And we were just able to baseline some very important things, like, you know, how long it takes for an attorney to move an email from one place to another if they didn't have to action it, which may mean, you know, well, maybe we need some new Outlook rules, right? If it's something that doesn't need to be reviewed, then what are we looking at? What are we, you know, we try to break these things down a little bit more so that we can, you know, save some time wherever we can.
So that really, I mean, it really gets you up close, right?
Oh, absolutely. You really feel the frustration. Like, here it comes again, right? You feel the frustration as you watch the video, because you can see that person's, you know, mouse. You know how when you're just kind of idle and you just click around the screen? I can see that. And then I'm timing it, right? And I'm seeing, you know, this person is sitting here waiting.
Waiting for a window to open, or
a document to generate, or for a system, you know, for, you know, we need to check a date or something and the date time calendar isn't working or anything like that. And it's just been amazing the insights that we've captured, everything from something that would affect facilities to our IT team, to our procurement team, right? Our software teams, our we have a I don't know if I should say most immigration firms, but a lot of immigration firms have their own proprietary software.
Yeah.
So then creating those workarounds within those systems or fixing those issues, like focusing on certain bugs that are really frustrating people, because I'm seeing it happen on the screen and you can't argue with that, right? Because right. Now we have data.
And the thing about that kind of work is, you know, because I've done some of the, like the actual sitting and watching people work, kind of going to the gamble with this thing, is that people just get almost used to it. Like I know it's going to take this long for this PDF to render, you know, so, you know, this is, you know, I just build it into my expectation of the day. And then when you go back to what you were saying about frustration, right? At the end of the day, you've got all these little frustrations that added up, you know, makes you might not be completely satisfied at the end of the day. But you don't even know where that came from. So that's
absolutely. No, that's a very, very good point. And that builds up. And, you know, immigration is tough. We don't have administrative relief, which is something that a lot of different legal practices have. So, for example, if I file a complaint and there's an error in it, I can petition the court to modify that complaint. In immigration, if we send something in with the wrong filing fee, it gets outright rejected. And we're at a point, you know, with certain things that things are being pulled out of a lottery. So if your case was rejected, you didn't even have a chance to get a part of that lottery. So it's unforgiving, at its best, it's unforgiving. And so we have to constantly be vigilant about these, you know, the slip ups that most people in their day to day are kind of allowed to do. We really can't. There are some that will literally break the entire process. And so that's why our work, the automation, everything that we're doing, you know, the trying to like coach people in terms of like, how did you get there? What was the next step? What were you expecting? And then what happened? Creating process maps and saying, what you have isn't a process map, but this is a process map. And this is going to help us see the difference between your process and what we may call the harmonized process. Because now we can do layovers or overlays. So it's just, it's been amazing. There's so much that can be done. It's sometimes overwhelming. I'm like, where do I start? And of course, I always want to start. I've got to start with process maps, because to know where I want to go, I got to know where I am.
Yeah.
And so that's why sometimes I just really focus on process maps, and it probably drives all the partners crazy, because that's the one thing I talk about the most.
But there's so much to do there.
There is.
So Jacqueline, you wrote an article for the first issue of the Women in Lean magazine. That has nothing to do with the law firm, and which I thought was just wonderful and included some beautiful photography. And that was about how you've been using Lean in your garden. So tell us about that.
So that is an interesting story, because it was right around the time that I was really learning about Lean and really getting my hands dirty, no pun intended. that we bought a home and had a plot large enough that I could start to build a garden. And so the first thing that we had to do was identify the issues with the current plot. So we started to, so the funny thing is that my partner of almost 15 years, he is he's a manufacturing engineer. And starting off as a paralegal, obviously, I didn't have any plans to become a Lean practitioner, as we often don't have plans to end up in Lean. And he had a very direct route into it, because he was taking his Six Sigma certification and things, because, you know, he went to school a little bit later. So when we come together and we look at this plot, I think we both immediately thought, okay, we need to assess the problem. Problem is, we were trying to grow a garden in the forest. So we started to apply just some basic, like, you know, DMAIC, some Lean tools like 5S. Like I badly need to 5S. I have a large cabinet that probably has hundreds of supplies in it. Everything from Jiffy pellets, which are those expanding peat pellets, to different kinds of fertilizer, to different flats, which are those things that, you know, when you buy your petunias or whatever, those are the little plastic things that they're in. 10-20 trays, which hold those inserts. I have so many things. And then there's also the stuff in the garden. So the actual flowers, the bulbs, the tubers, the seeds, because I love to make my life very difficult. And so I use seeds. So Lean really works for me in the garden, not just with regard to when we first started to plot it out and how we would lay it out and how it would be most efficient. So then when we were pulling, you know, the hose around that we would get the most efficient, you know, we would, you know, put spikes in the ground so that we could get the most efficient way around the different rows that I have. And then we decided that because the watering was so intense and how much we had to water and likely what we were wasting on water, because we were looking at our water bills, mm-hmm. we decided to put in drip irrigation, and that made our bills go down. So it started, like I said, started with the plot, continued through to building the beds, putting those in a strategic location, you know, based on how the sun and where the sun would be at different times, because I'm still somewhat in the forest.
Yeah.
And then it comes all the way down to every single season, because I'm in Northeast Georgia, and it's sweltering in August. And it was, I think, about 16 degrees 2 weeks ago. So we have a very, you know, we have a very interesting climate, and it's somewhat unforgiving. So you could have the best garden, the best setup, the best fertilizer, and still have things die because of the you know, conditions, the humidity and the things that can happen. And so I use lean sometimes to experiment. One of the issues I had one year was that I kept having mold issues with one of my plants, and I happened to have a few of them planted next to each other. So I created a control, left one plant by itself on its own. It's kind of sad. And then I had one that I would treat with copper, which is it's a copper powder. It's organic. And I used another, which is Bayer. It's a synthetic fungicide. And so what I would do is I would set the expectation, you know, I'd set an overall expectation, like within 14 days, this should have cleared up. But then incrementally, as those days would go by, I would go out every day into the garden and look and compare. Now, that I don't know that that's qualitative analysis, because I'm not necessarily like measuring the health of the plant based on, let's say, cell structure or anything really, really specific that like a scientist might or a biologist might want. But I really was trying to apply, you know, experimental foundations to what I do. And so another thing that I track is yield. So every piece of produce that comes out of the garden gets weighed and gets logged. And I have a spreadsheet. And so since I buy seeds, and I try to buy heirloom seeds, because, you know, those are the ones that are kind of missing from our grocery stores, those are those old varieties, I can tell based on performance and not someone's opinion, if a plant really will do well where I live, because there are things that they've created in Arkansas, which apparently can tolerate a ton of heat, and mine was dead by mid-June, right? So I'm actually collecting data on height of the plant, whether it blooms, how long it blooms, if it's a flower. And then again, with the vegetables, I weigh them. Sometimes there's a measure like length, because I have these squash that can get up to 4 feet long.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it gets kind of ridiculous, because my partner looks at me and he's like, you really want to put all this work into it? And I say, well, yeah, because I need to know what's working. And I want to get to a point where I'm growing exactly what it is that I need, the right amount. Mm-hmm. Right. So that also that if I have any extra, those can go to food pantries, because people need food right now.
Right.
People will always need fresh organic food. So that way I can also set targets if I want to, you know, it's just an amazing tool. You know, Lean and Six Sigma are intuitive to me, which most people are probably like, wow, that can't be possible. But I thrive within that framework, within those frameworks. I guess to me they're married. I don't know how to divorce Lean from Six Sigma, but you know, I to me the garden is my respite. And so using and loving to use Lean in my hobby really tells me that, like, I'm all about Lean. I'm a true believer. I think it helps people. It helps my plants. You know, it helps me know if I've over-fertilized. It helps me know so much. You know, I when I touch base with people, I can tell if after we've worked on a solution, are they happier? Do they seem happier? Again, that question of, can you now go on vacation? And having that person say, yes, I left my phone in the room and I went to the pool and I didn't check my emails all day. And we sit and we just celebrate that for a minute, because people don't think that's possible. And that should be a requirement. And I actually got one thing about that. I actually got an email from our managing partners. It's just to let you know the different kind of culture that we have at BAL. And the email said, "Dear Jacqueline, you have not taken enough vacation this year. We need to see a dramatic improvement in that." And that's when I was smacked in the face with the fact that these people actually understand that we need a rest, right? That we need a creative break. Thankfully for me, my garden is 45 feet away. When I need a break, I go over there, I walk around, I see some butterflies, I feel great. I come back to work, I'm working with Lean, I'm helping people, people are smiling, or people are figuring out their own answers to their own questions and feeling like, oh my God, I fixed this. And I said, of course you fixed it. You had it in y'all the whole time. You just needed a little coaching, but you did all the work. And they say, no, it's all you. And I say, no, really, like this information has nothing to do with me. I don't know anything about what you do. My structure helps me ask you, the expert, the right question so that you can solve those problems. And it makes people feel so good because one of my favorite sayings, and it's from a cartoon, I think, is that when things are done well, you'll never know things are being done at all. And it's usually when the hiccups happen, right? The problems, that's when you say, oh, something's going on here.
Right.
But when things are going well,
you don't even know
what's happening.
Yeah. So Jacqueline, thinking about where you are in your career and looking back on where you've come from, what's your advice to a young person starting their career?
My advice is to be strong and find your tribe. And what I mean by that is for 23 years in legal, I never had a network. And when I went into Lean and I found Karen and Dorsey and Crystal and Bella, you as one of the women in Lean, I realized that that was what I was missing my entire career. So I would suggest, go ahead.
This is Karen Ross and Dorsey Sherman and Crystal Davis, who are the founding mothers of the Women in Lean at Table.
Yes, thank you for that. And having that tribe and that support system when you're starting out is imperative, because we're such a connected group of people that want to be supportive and we want to empower other women and have every woman be successful in every way, and getting them there, however much it takes or however many people we need to recommend that they speak to. So find that network, because there has to be one for, most industries. I was just lucky enough to have found it. And then I also suggest to strongly read about imposter syndrome, because it paralyzes people who are brilliant. And I've read that almost every successful person struggles with imposter syndrome. So I'd like for people to understand that this is normal and that it's something that we can ourselves recognize. And the only way we can get over it is by doing, right? Getting it done, learning from our mistakes or our failures, and really just shining by knowing everything's going to be okay.
That is great advice.
Thank you.
So Jacqueline Hannah, thank you so much for being on the edges of Lean, traveling to the edges of Lean, and of course, always right back to the center, which is people. I really appreciate you spending time with us.
Thanks for the invite, Bella. It's been a blast.
This is Bella Engelbach, and I'd like to thank Jacqueline Herder for being my guest on The Edges of Lean. How are you applying the people side of Lean in your work? And how does your garden grow? Please join me in exploring more of The Edges of Lean. There's a lot to learn. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelbach. This is a Lean for Humans production.